and welcome to We the People. This is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today...
And we've been
today,
gone for 2 weeks, so now we're totally screwed up.
No, we're not screwed up. We know exactly what's going on. Our sponsor today is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer, and you can find them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. And anything tractors, give them a call. They can get you fixed up over there. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com. Great address.
Boom.
Yeah, boom.
Gosh, you would have thought of that. Me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you are. And who's our guest today?
Our guest is the indomitable Dr. Harry Booyans. And I'm trying desperately to get to the page for today because I had a little malfunction in my computer. And hopefully we have him on Skype like we're supposed to. This is actually part 7 in our series on South Africa. Some of the shows have been, I decided to number them because it was getting kind of confusing. Some of them have been an hour, like half the show, and some have been 2 hour. So if you're interested or you, actually how about this, if you don't know anything about what's going on in South Africa, then this is really important for you. And if you've been following it, we hope you'll go back through the series. So we've looked at the history of the Dutch, because that's who settled South Africa a long time ago. And Harry will give us all that. The farm attacks. We did the politics of white genocide, because if you haven't heard that this is a genocidal event on the white people in South Africa, then you've been watching CNN, actually, probably. We did Obama's connection there. We're going to get back into the land thing again today, but who stole the land? And then on September 9th, so last month, the world is finally watching. So those are kind of the topics or the titles of the topics that we did, and I really think you'll learn a lot. So Dr. Booyans is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. And because it's the seventh time I've said that, I actually got it out without screwing it up.
Spit it out like it was nothing.
He's originally from South Africa, with a 360-year bloodline in that country. He lives with his family on the forested slopes outside Vancouver, Canada, at the moment. His life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States and British defense establishment. He applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy and, I have to say, in a great deal of... it's very conversational. His writing style is very conversational, very, very easy to read and grasp what he's talking about. It's sort of like having a conversation, but it's just you and your computer. Hard Evidence is a trademark of his work, and it's won him a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what's happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and there are many. I think most Americans would be shocked because we don't learn any of this. And the warning that South Africa holds for the Western civilization in general and the United States of America in particular. So, I don't usually read the whole thing, but I thought I should because I sort of take for granted that people have maybe listened to him on previous shows. And in case you have not, this isn't just a bunch of opinion from someone who's never been there or who read about it in a book somewhere. He lived there for 47 years. And obviously his family goes back 360 years. That's pretty good. I don't think most of us can trace our family history 360 years. So, without further delay, do we have him in there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at
there
that.
He is.
Even though we got here at 12:01, because we just couldn't cut it any later. We were trying to give Ashley a little heart palpitation there. It worked.
Yeah. Nice to have you. Nice to have you back, Harry.
Yeah, well, good morning, Bill. Good morning, Aaron.
Hey.
And, good morning to your listeners.
Well, we're looking forward to the next installment, because it's kind of become an installment sort of thing, and it's been in the media a little bit. Our shows with you sort of came out of the blue for a lot of people. It's like, why are you guys talking about that? And then like a month into it, maybe 6 weeks in, suddenly we started hearing about it in the media. So, I mean, I figure we should keep talking about it because it's working.
Well, the reason I think we're all talking about it is because the beast that's been stalking South Africa ever since around the late 1700s finally took us down, and it's coming for you.
Isn't that nice? Yeah, because today is expropriation without compensation. What we titled today. So you want to give people a thumbnail sketch?
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe I should just, as you say, a thumbnail sketch of what that's about. And since we've discussed it before, I probably should do a little update. And I hope Ashley's got the clips that I sent lined up for us. And after that, I would like to get back to that beast, if I may.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I don't think folks generally put it together in this way that I've got the picture together, and I think it's important that they have that, because this thing's been coming an awfully long time. And we in South Africa, much of our history was dictated by this beast. And you were spared all of that, and it's only now that your demographic numbers are starting to change that you can smell it on the breeze. Okay, so expropriation.
And is it okay if I post this?
I sent you a copy that you can just take what's between the dotted lines.
Oh,
there.
Oh, perfect.
Change the few words to make it more press friendly.
Okay, thanks.
So, Aaron, is this where I give the thumbnail sketch?
Exactly, because we have like 3 minutes till the break, so I figure, okay, if you kind of give people a little snippet of what we're going to do today, then they'll hang with us through the break.
Okay, so I have been talking about farm murders in South Africa since around 2006. Loudly so. I wrote a book about it called Amabulu, which was published in late 2013, early 2014. So it's been going close on 5 years. And finally, everything that I warned about has come true. And the government in South Africa, under a new president called Cyril Ramaphosa, who was Mandela's understudy and most favored person, he became president, and he promptly announced his intention to expropriate the property of white people without compensation. And he did that around February of this year. And, of course, people screamed blue murder in South Africa, but the world didn't want to take any notice. And then President Trump made an announcement on that subject.
And that, you know, seizing people's land, I think, is one of the hallmarks of communism or socialism, whatever you want to call it. You know, they don't like you. They'll just take your land.
Well, that's
land
the end of your independence, yeah, your freedom,
your
and everything
freedom
else.
And everything, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I told folks that I knew that's it. That government has stepped over a line where Americans are going to sit up and listen. And my words weren't cold before President Trump reacted. Now, maybe we should leave that for a couple of seconds later, because I would like to do a sequence of statements that followed, and the break will kind of blow that up.
Okay. All right. And I'm going to post the clips that we're doing and all that, just so people, you know, if you're listening to this and you're driving or doing other stuff, this will all be online. You can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And so we'll get that all on there for you. Okay. We will be right back. We're going to chat about South Africa today. And I think you'll find it very interesting.
Shall we do about them?
And we're back. All right, Harry, it's all you.
Okay.
We've got our links posted, and we're ready to roll.
Okay. Let me do it this way. I would like to just read President Trump's statement that caused a major rumpus around the world, because the truth is never, never welcome. He said, "I've asked Secretary of State Pompeo to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. Quote, South African government is now seizing land from white farmers, unquote," and that quote he got from Tucker Carlson on Fox News. I really think that the folks in South Africa owe Tucker Carlson a huge debt of gratitude for being the first really serious high-level news anchor person in the world to hang this issue right there where the world can see it. So I would like to thank him. Now the question is, why would President Trump do that? Well, he's actually had close contact with his South African equivalent, his historic business equivalent, a guy called Saul Kurzner, for many years. There's many pictures of the two of them together that you can find all over the internet. And also with Melania and Kurzner's wife and so forth. Both were real estate developers. So I'm sure he's known about South Africa very well. I wrote an article about that once. But to make it graphically clear to folks why this has become an issue, I would appreciate it if Ashley would play us the first clip that I've sent, because that is the leader of the third biggest party in the Parliament of South Africa. And previously, this man was the youth leader of the ruling party. So he's right there in the midst of it all. And you will hear him sing, "Kiss the Boer." He is not allowed to say "kill the Boer" anymore, so he replaces the double L with double S. But listen to how he does it, and listen to the audience. And by the way, in view of the tone of the voices you heard screaming around the Supreme Court or the Capitol building yesterday, I leave it to your listeners to decide what the gender would be of the people yelling, you know, in response to this guy. His name is Malema. Julius Malema, and he is the leader of the so-called economic freedom fighters, a crowd of people who dress up in red utility uniforms when they go to parliament and they sit there. It's a far-left socialist communist kind of party, broken away from the central party, which is already communist control. So you can imagine where that is. So I give you Julius Malema in full flight on stage in front of an audience.
All right.
Kiss the poor, the farmer.
Okay.
Wow. And we know, you can't hear it on your end because you can't seem to do two things at once. But the machinery won't do it.
I heard the piped version of it via your set, I guess.
Okay, good.
So I think that gives folks an idea of what's actually happening there. I think
what that means for people who haven't tuned in before. What is that? What is?
He's saying, "Kill the Boer, the farmer. Kill the Boer, the farmer." You know, brrr, pow, pow, pow.
Yeah.
And then while he's doing that, he's turning his finger into the shape of a gun.
Yeah.
And he repeats it. And the reason why he's saying "kiss the Boer, the farmer" is that, first of all, the word Boer is just Afrikaans or Dutch for farmer. So it's "kiss the farmer," really, translated all into English. And he's not allowed by law to say "kill," so he says "kiss." But there's no doubt about what he means. Okay. So it is now okay for black politicians in South Africa to physically dance on stage. You need to, you know, your viewers. Or
yeah, the weird little marching dance he does is like...
They're dancing to this proposed murder. Okay?
That's creepy.
And that is the situation in South Africa. And then people leave those gatherings and they go and kill farmers. What else?
Yeah.
What exactly else are people expecting? So yeah. It's open season on farmers in South Africa. And in the midst of all this, the state president announces that he proposes taking those people's farms and not remunerating them for that. Okay. Yeah. Now, this is what President Trump was picking up. This is what people would have made clear to him. Now, the proposed legislation that the new president, Ramaphosa, put on the table, when President Trump did that tweet, within days, Ramaphosa, the president, temporarily withdrew that proposal to give a job to a commission to investigate the changing of the Constitution. And that commission is led by a senior leader of the Communist Party in South Africa.
Well, nothing could go wrong there.
Okay. And the plan is that they would come back around November, which is next month or so, with a revised proposal on how they propose to steal the land. Okay.
Jeez.
Because I think last time I looked, expropriation of property without compensation, the rest of us in civilization would call that outright theft, I suspect. Don't know if you know any other word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
Now, forgive my sarcastic, cynical way of talking. That is a psychological defense mechanism that you develop when you live in South Africa.
Well, and unfortunately, when they steal the land... That's not all they're stealing. I mean,
right.
they're going for personal property, and they're actually killing people to do it.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's much bigger than just taking the land.
So this is what I get to next, because it then so happens that a small number of weeks ago, something like 2 weeks or so ago, Ramaphosa flew to New York, that's the new president, flew to New York, where he went to a Bloomberg conference. I'll get back later to why would this guy be going to Bloomberg conferences. But anyway, he flew to New York to go to a Bloomberg conference, and lo and behold, he ends up sitting next to President Trump.
Oops, awkward.
Okay, and in the next clip, if Ashley can get to it.
She's already?
I've given her from the beginning to a certain point in time where we can cut it. Here is what Ramaphosa had to say about it when he got back to South Africa. Listen carefully.
We were seated together at a lunch table, so we never really got time to talk about the tweet. It was just an opportunity to shake hands, to say how are you and all that. But on the tweet itself, it was clearly misinformed. And whoever gave him that information was completely wrong. There are no killings of farmers or white farmers in South Africa.
We are at Klaasmoordem on the mountains.
Okay.
Wow.
People come here.
Right. So,
except for, you know, a simple search even on Google, you know, regardless of what they want to censor and all the rest of it, a simple search by pretty much anybody, you could prove that they're murdering farmers in South Africa.
The formal media, particularly in Britain and in the United States, is going all out to try and minimize the phenomenon, trying to say, actually, it's decreasing, and all kinds of outright lies. You know, and but if by now the ordinary thinking person in the United States still believes the formal media like CNN and the New York Times, you're idiots. Okay? Just let me remind you. I mean, there is just no way, you know, that I can believe that the intelligent people that I've had as personal friends all my life can be that dumb. Now, the simple point is the president of that country denies that farmers are being murdered. That was one too many for a the farmer's wife in South Africa, and she responded with her own clip that is doing the rounds on Facebook. Her name is Mariandra Eunice. She is the wife of a poultry farmer just outside the capital of Pretoria, where I used to live for 20 years. And clip three is what she has to say about it. I suggest you listen carefully.
This message is for President Ramaphosa and the good people of America. President Ramaphosa recently stated very casually in New York to the media that there are no killings of white farmers in South Africa. There are no farm murders. Really? My name is Mariandra Yenes, and I'm a survivor of a farm attack. My husband was shot 6 times during such an attack. He was murdered in cold blood in front of me and my 6-year-old daughter. He was shot 6 times, and the last one was in the head. I had to pick up our broken life after that. I had to give birth to our 4th child, our son, 5 days after Daddy's funeral. These attacks do happen. It happens almost daily. Our story is one of thousands. What would you do if it happens to you or to your loved ones? What would you do if you had to raise 4 little children alone after your husband was murdered in cold blood and they stole nothing? How would you feel if you had to slip in the blood of your loved one? The smell of it seeping through the floors of your house, the house you were supposed to be safe in. These attacks happen, and it happens to good and normal people. What would you do if this happened to you? What would you do if your government denies that it happens? Would you keep quiet? So I ask you, the people of America, to help us to share this message, to help us to spread awareness of these farm murders, because they do happen. We appeal to you to help us.
Wow.
Wow. So, I guess he was lying. Needless to say. I guess the farm murders do happen. All right. I hope people do go on there and look at these clips. How about this? Let's take a really quick break, and we're going to come back, and we'll discuss all of this. You are listening to We the People. You can find all the information we're talking about, as well as information about our guest and his previous shows with us, Dr. Harry Bouyans. And you can get that at wethepeopleradio.us. We've had a couple of minutes to digest that last one.
Well, that was just a heart-wrenching clip.
And Harry, what do you think? Do you think something bad will happen to her now?
Well, maybe just to make the point, one needs to add that during the shooting of her husband, their 6-year-old little daughter grabbed her piggy bank and offered it to the killers to spare her father.
Okay.
This lady is being, she's on medication, she's being treated. We don't know what else those attackers did, but I have my suspicions, though it will probably never be admitted. She's been undergoing treatment for going on a year now, 2 years.
And so just to be clear with people, these aren't like random gangs of people that are robbing people, or this isn't just crime.
No, this is government sanctioned.
This is government sanctioned intimidation to make her leave, really.
Well, let me just add that please be aware that you can find the pictures on Google, Google Images, of these guys running around with cell phone jammers, Chinese-built cell phone jammers. Believe me, you do not get those at Radio Shack.
Yeah, here we are in South Africa, and they've got cell phone jammers, and they're running around to these farms. I mean, it isn't like people who just, you know, decided to go out for a joyride and do something bad. This is all really very well orchestrated.
There's also one statement that the lady slurs a bit when she says it, and I doubt whether folks heard it, but she said, nothing was taken.
Yes, I heard her say that.
Okay, and this is the one thing that the farmers keep asking the government. Now, dear Mr. President, why is it that these killers never seem to steal anything? At best, they take a car or a cell phone. Why is it that they never steal anything? Why is it that they come and they just kill? Okay. Now, there used to be around 80,000 individual farmers, white farmers in South Africa before Mandela took office. It's now down to something like, I think, 32 or 33,000. Okay. You want to talk about who's going to do, where's the food going to come from? Okay. So I thought, Aaron, if you would allow me, I should just very quickly do those drop-dead important historical facts again, because I'm sure many of your visitors have never, or listeners have never heard them. And I do this because it's so terribly ironic, you know. And if just one channel like Fox would pick this up and just tell these basic truths to people, it would change the entire picture. So I've created this little document that's called South Africa, the Drop Dead Important Historical Facts. One, when the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, it's that far back, the nearest black people were 700 miles away beyond the 350 millimeter summer rainfall line, with its higher rainfall and tall grass for cattle grazing. West of that line, it's less, the cows can't live. Their civilization was based on milk, and they invaded from the northeast, supplanting the indigenous Khoi and San people. Please listen to every word I said there. I am not suggesting there were no black people in South Africa. There were black people in South Africa, but they were moving from the northeast to the southwest. They were not at Cape Town waiting for the Dutch to land. Next, it took two generations, that is until 1702, before white met black in South Africa overland for the first time 500 to 600 miles east of Cape Town. It took five generations until 1780 before the first major armed clash at roughly the same spot. And that spot is the Great Fish River. And as fate would have it, it's pretty much where Bartholomew Dias turned back in the late 1400s. Somehow, there's something to do with the Great Fish River that makes all of mankind turn there. Next. No, and this is important, terribly important, because it sits at the root of everything that we're being killed for. No indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not by the Portuguese, not by the Dutch, not by the British, not by us, by no one. No indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. But Nelson Mandela's Amakosa people did enslave the Amafengu, who were Zulu-type people who have fled from serious terror further northeast. Mozambique and Angola, relatively nearby countries, were the nearest places the Portuguese traded in slaves. And like elsewhere, they were sailed into slavery by their fellow black people. The Portuguese slave routes bypassed the coast of South Africa. I shall say that again. The Portuguese slave routes bypassed the coast of South Africa. It's the white South Africans, irony, oh irony, it is the white South Africans, not the black, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. They were often Indian or Indonesian, sometimes black East or West Africans. I, Harry Boyens, have a black West African slave ancestor. How do you like that? I mean, this is nuts.
And that's just not something you ever hear.
I'm the white guy that they want dead so badly. I'm the one with a black slave ancestor, not Mandela. Okay? The indigenous Cape population at the time were not black people. They were Khoi people and San people. For those who know anything about Africa, the old names for those people are respectively Hottentot and San. The word Hottentot is considered derogatory, so we won't use it any further. But the liberal and politically correct folks are falling over their feet trying to find a word for the Bushmen, because the Bushmen themselves have decided that the word San is derogatory, but the professors are so busy, they're not hearing the subject talk. So I shall refer to them as Bushmen from here on until they give me a better name they would like to call themselves. As a culture, the Khoi were almost completely destroyed by the great smallpox epidemic of 1713. Many people think that the so-called colored people of South Africa are mostly Khoi descendant. I think they're in for a rude shock when they do the DNA analysis. They'll find they're mostly of Indonesian, Indian, etc. stock, a lot of white mixed in, etc., with some Khoi. I also have Khoi ancestry. So this is the irony. Since they were the original people there, I have more right in that country than all these black invaders have. This is nuts. Okay? And no, I am not Elizabeth Warren. I probably should shut my yap about American politics, but this is why you'll find me throwing my pillow at the TV every now and then.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, it's nice to know we're not alone. It's got to be incredibly frustrating, especially coming from there and having family and friends who still live there. And then you look at what they say; it's like,
what they deem as your history is totally incorrect, and the correct history is never repeated.
Well, and the bad information is allowing people to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here comes the next bit. Something I hear very often, you know, when people finally say, okay, we hear you, Harry, it makes sense, thank you for telling us, why don't folks just get out of there and go back to Europe? Excuse me, but since 1814, which is the year in which the Dutch sold the Cape to the Brits, since 1814, the white Afrikaner has had no right of return to Europe, unlike the colonial Portuguese, British, or French. And even the British descended Rhodesians, when they were put through hell in the old Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, they could pack up their bags. Those of Afrikaans descent could go to South Africa. Those of British descent could go back to Britain. The Portuguese chased out of Angola and Mozambique could go to Portugal. You know?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
And all the Portuguese could go back to Portugal, and the French to France. Today's young Afrikaner's great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was the last man with any right to a life elsewhere. Where are they supposed to go? There's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah, because
go back to Europe, you know.
Right, right. Well, they kind of treat them like they moved in there, displaced other people, and they should go back to where they came from, but that is where they came, you know, that's where they started.
Okay. So, I think in that respect, it's important historically to just point out that the great colonizing of Africa was done starting around 1880, after the Berlin Conference, where all those guys got together in a smoky room and decided how to carve up Africa. Okay?
Right.
So, finally, in 1836, completely deserted by their new British overlords, they packed their belongings on ox wagons and set off at 15 to 20 miles a day on their ox wagons, northwards on the Great Trek to escape British control. So they mostly settled on the higher, central, colder prairie, for the most part not occupied by black people. There they created two corn and ranching republics until diamonds and gold were discovered, at which point the Brits promptly accused them of slavery and demanded to go and save everybody from these dastardly African trekkers with their Bibles.
Wow. You know,
so if you dare to have Bibles and guns in an ox wagon, you are naturally a slaver, you and your wife, okay? And as a Canadian historian pointed out cynically once, it's probably a good thing that the Brits annexed the old Transvaal Boer Republic, because then they could see for themselves there wasn't a single slave to free.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a Canadian to say that. So the Afrikaner was not part of Europe's late 1800s scramble for Africa. In fact, they fought two wars against Britain for that, winning the first, losing the second, and for their pains, the Brits put them in concentration camps where of my Boyan's family who went into those camps, 57% of them died in the British concentration camps.
And that was in 1901?
Long before the Germans did that in Europe. So, you know, we don't take kindly to moral lectures from London. We really don't.
No.
Nor should you.
You know, we fought on the British side in the First World War. We did so in the Second World War. We fought on the American side in the Korean War. Our Air Force actually operated as part of the American squadrons in Korea. We've always been there at the side of the West, doing our best, fighting like crazy. We played a major role in chasing Rommel out of Africa, fighting the way all up the spine of Italy. My own father-in-law protecting U.S. ground troops from his Mark 9 Spitfire over Italy. Okay? But when our moment of need came, we were shoved down the toilet.
Hmm. Yeah, so, and ignored, and actually lied about, which is makes it easier to ignore.
Yeah, we're not allowed to just die. We must be denigrated as we die.
Jeez.
So I'm part of what might be called the last Mohicans, and we are not going to go quietly.
Good.
And my comment to my fellow South Africans and ex-South Africans is, scream your heads off, because Americans can't hear unless you scream, because there's so much screaming going on the left in the United States.
Yeah, about things that are just imaginary.
Trivial in comparison.
Yeah, well, they're imaginary. I mean, honestly, they're not even trivial. Most of it's just imaginary.
My belief, if I may, and this is where present American politics come into this, if it's done one thing, it has illustrated to the level-headed thinking American that if this is how the American media can lie about what's going on in the U.S. itself, imagine how it can lie about people who have no voice 8,000 miles away.
that's the absolute truth of it. Yeah, if we had media back during the Salem witch trials, it would look just like now, mostly.
Yes.
We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillant. We are speaking about South Africa, and I think you will find it very interesting. All of the information is on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. All right, Harry.
Okay.
It's our next destination.
Aaron, if possible, it would be most helpful if you could switch on the messaging in Skype. It might help us a bit.
And then we could chat?
No, I need to just cue a couple of things during those breaks, if at all possible. I was thinking that... I would like to walk folks through the history of the beast, as I would call it. There's a beast that has basically taken us down as a nation. And that thing, if you can't smell it on the breeze, you know, you need to have your olfactory abilities checked, because it's coming for you. You've already had a first whiff of it for the previous, from 2009 to 2016. There was clearly something rotten in the state of Denmark. Many Americans could figure it, but they couldn't put a finger on it.
Well, and he had, and I mean, lest he become the person that is not named, Barack Obama has been in South Africa fanning the flames on this whole thing. And we did a program on that, but just so people, you know, realize, President Trump isn't the first American president to, I mean, I don't know if weigh in is the right term, but to say something about South Africa.
Yeah. Mostly people have explained why we should die. I would like to, before I get into that history, just make one statement in that regard. One of the shows we did had to do with the influence of matters in South Africa on the United States, and I mentioned the taking down of statues and the effects via President Obama and things from Kenya that entered the United States and so forth. I presume that folks don't basically know that a couple of years ago, an Hungarian guy named Gyorgy Schwartz appointed as his senior advisor the very same Cyril Ramaphosa who is now the president of South Africa. So let me do some testing here. Bill, do you know who Gyorgy Schwartz is?
No, I don't.
Come on, Bill.
No.
History Channel, Bill.
No,
oh,
I do not know, Harry.
There we go. Put him on the spot, right? I won't do that
and
to
then
the
rub,
ladies.
And then rub so it in.
You can go free for a couple of minutes there, Aaron. Gyorgy Schwartz is the original name
of George, I'd be looking it up.
of George Soros.
No. Oh, there we go. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. Everyone knows who he is.
Okay. So if you guys don't understand the influence of George Soros on matters going down in the United States right now, then we got problems.
Yeah. Well, so, especially when they, and we just caught bits and pieces of this because we've been gone for a couple of weeks and, you know, when you're out of town and you're traveling and doing other things, I don't know, just shutting off some of this was kind of a necessity, but you never can escape it all. But they were talking about, some gal was on CNN or MSNBC, I don't remember which. And she was talking about, she was one of the protesters there at the Kavanaugh hearings, and she was telling them that she was paid by a Soros organization. So that whole thing of that's just a conservative conspiracy, whatever, no, it's totally true. And they openly talk about it.
Okay. So just as long as you know that the present South African president, the one who says there are no farm murders and wants to take away people's property without compensation, he's an advisor to the guy who's now got probably more influence in the U.S. than any other human being alive. Okay. I guess the only person who matches him for sheer power is now President Donald Trump. Now, I would like to start this history of the beast, for lack of a better phrase. I would like to start that, oddly, in 1979, and then I'm going to go back 200 years. And it starts with me minding my business in an office in New York, upstate New York, Westchester County, where I worked at IBM in 1979. In fact, it was in the same building where episode of Jeopardy was run when the winners played against the computer, that very same building. Hmm. And I had to share an office with a Northern European socialist professor. And obviously the conversation
sounds like something less than a joyride.
Well, can you imagine me locked up in an office with a communist Danish professor for a year? Okay. And that office was of such a nature that he had to get up and leave by the door so that I could get out to go to the men's room, okay?
Oh.
That's how big that office was. Now, one day, I finally decided there is no other way. Turn the conversation around. And I told him, what would you have us do? This is our situation in South Africa. We are completely outnumbered. We're all that's left of Western civilization at that tip of Africa. We've been there for 350 years. We're doing our best to survive against all odds. The whole world is against us. What would you have us do? And here are his words. He rose to his own 6'6". Should have had horns on his head as a Viking, but he didn't have those. And he said to me, You are a sick anachronism and a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die.
Very subtle.
Yeah. So it's not as though I have confusion as to what the liberal socialist left want from me. They want nothing from me. They want my death. They want us to cease to exist. Now, let's analyze those words just for a second, and then you'll see how that takes us back 200 years. He says, you are a sick anachronism. And in other words, anachronism means something that's out of place in time, specifically out of time. So we are like something from his past. We're reminding him of something of his past. We don't know what it is, but it's reminding him of something from the past. Presumably he's past, otherwise how would he know about it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and then secondly, you're a blot on the name of Europe. So it has nothing to do with South Africa. It's got something to do about how our existence, because he wants us dead, how our existence is a blot on the name of Europe. So could it have something to do with Europe's colonial past? Could it have something to do with Europe's slavery? Could it have something to do with the fact that Denmark at that point had Greenland as a colony? Could it be that he wanted me dead for everything that his grandpappy did wrong? If he's unhappy with grandpappy, he's going to take it out on me.
Yeah, and that'll make it all right.
And that'll make it all right as long as we die. So that's not very different from the view that the Europeans, many Europeans, not all, have of Israel. They really just wish that the Jewish folks in Israel would die and go away and spare them all the bother to remember what it is they did to them in the first place. It's called get off our conscience. That's what this is.
Yeah, and that's about the only thing that makes any sense.
Okay. And I've run that past several people, and they kind of told me, yes, that's a psychotic condition. That's worth serious treatment. When you've got a situation where you are so guilt-ridden that you're telling other people to their face that they should die, I pose to you that that's a condition that ought to get you in front of a qualified doctor.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so
we have to take a hard break for the news. Now, we can't vouch for the news. We're not sure what they're going to say yet, but it's supposed to be the news. We're going to come back with our guest, Harry Pouyans. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. And just to clear up that little disclaimer at the beginning, we're not actually broadcasting for entertainment purposes. That we just throw that in so you'll keep listening. But we're broadcasting for educational purposes, especially today. The shows on South Africa are for educational purposes. There. But you still can't blame the station for it if you don't like what we say. I guess you could call and yell at us. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us and got our phone numbers on there and everything else, email, phone numbers. So, you know, don't feel like you can't reach out and communicate.
There you go.
So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard up in Shasta Lake City, just north of Reading. And you can reach them at 530-226-9226 or get them on the web at readingtractors.com. Yeah, .com. Yeah. So, yeah, anything tractors, give them a call. They got some great deals up there, and they can do the service, order your parts. The whole shooting match. So give them a call.
And if you've never owned a tractor and you need one, it's a good place to go get educated.
There you are.
Doesn't Bill sound relaxed?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty
Bill's relaxed. Bill's
yeah.
on vacation. Bill's been on vacation for a week. Actually, we left town and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Left town. We went to the happiest place on earth. 43 square miles.
It was a little sweaty, but it was very relaxing.
It was extraordinarily sweaty. Yeah. In Florida, sunny Florida. But, you know, before we left, I did say when I come back, I want to make I put all the fans in the house away, packed them all up, put them away. I said, when I come back, we're going to have fall. And you know what? It's like 60-something degrees today.
Yeah.
I was sort of kidding, but not really.
No, it's beautiful.
Apparently, I control the weather, and I didn't know that. So next year, we won't be having 115-degree summers. I'll get on this program a little earlier.
Yeah. I'll put my order in.
Yeah, no kidding. All righty. So our guest today is Dr. Harry Bouyans, and he is a PhD defense and aerospace physicist from the Cold War era. He has a 360-year bloodline in South Africa, so his history dates back that far. And I guess I'd kind of stack that up against anybody's genealogy. I don't know a lot of people who've traced their ancestors back that far, but he has lived there for 47 years and is very well versed in the issues that are facing the folks there today. This is installment number 7 in our South Africa series. That's just 7 different weeks. Not all of those were 2-hour shows, but they are all archived for you at wethepeopleradio.us, and you can get them all there commercial free. And all of the information that he cites, any of the video clips that are played, the actual video clips are listed there for you so you can see them, since obviously this goes out initially on radio. But if you go to your computer and want to look it up, it's all there for you.
A lot of good information that he's posted.
You don't have to believe us, because if it was for entertainment purposes, we would not give you any information.
No.
And then you would just have to believe us. But this is actually factual, so you can go do your homework. It's a whole new idea. We're hoping it catches on in the media. You know, actual factual information going out to people where they can verify it themselves and are encouraged to do so. Rather than browbeaten and belittled into believing them. So, yeah, please don't believe us. You should believe Harry, but yeah, go check him out. He has a terrific blog, by the way, that we did not promote really at the beginning. But his website is cliffwoodfog.com, and it's CLIFF Wood, WOOD, and it's Fog, FOGGE.com. A little tricky on the spelling. And from there, you can find his blog. It's H. Bouyans, BOOYENS, .wordpress.com. And he's a terrific writer. All terribly current. On today's issues and a lot of history, so you get to learn about current events with a really good historical framework. Something that we don't get a lot of these days. All right, that said, back to you, Harry.
Thank you, Harry. I hope Bill has forgiven me for the Georgie Schwartz question.
We're having some sort of messages from NASA are coming through. No, that's not it. That was on that ride we were on at Disney World. That's different, but we are going to have to listen to the little tape feed come through. So keep going and ignore that.
Okay. So what I would like to do is, connecting it to current U.S. situations, I need to explain that my people in South Africa are probably very well described, even though we don't have Walmart in South Africa. We can be very well described as smelly Walmart people in mostly flyover country, another country where the liberals cling to the coast. And, we cling to our guns and our Bibles, and we don't care that you refer to us like that. So we understand mostly the people who live sort of from within 50 miles of the coast to 50 miles from the other coast in the U.S. I find that I can walk through any door in the U.S. and speak to any of those folks as though I've lived there all my life. So we're the same people. It's just the guys on the coast are weird. Something to do with the water, I think. Now, how can people like that want to, how might they want to go back to the French philosophers of the 1700s? And I'm going to show that to you. And part of this is that I have a great love of history, and I know that folks are often taught history in a horribly boring fashion, like you have to remember a bunch of names and a bunch of dates, and then somewhere in between some inane professor comes along or teacher and asks you, when was the world 1512, you know. So, I want to go back to around 1782. At that time, in France, you had these new French philosophers who were talking about, they weren't using these words, but the Brits put these words in their mouth, and it's an adequate description. They talked about the noble savage, that somehow the, quote, civilized, unquote, Western man was tainted, and the, quote, noble savage was noble no matter how many people he killed or what depravity he committed. And somehow, it is only when that depraved white man arrived somewhere near the savage that the savage somehow, remarkably, turns into some horrendous, horrible person. So it must be the effect of this Western guy, this Western Christian. He's corrupting everything he touches, right? That was their philosophy. The sheer stupidity of it is just galactic. But here is an example of one of those Frenchmen traveling the bush in South Africa in 1782. This little pearl of insight from a Frenchman called Lavelin. He says, in every part, that's fancy English for place, in every part where the natives live entirely unconnected with whites, their manners are mild and amiable. In other words, when we whites don't see them, they're very nice people. Whenever we don't see them, in other words, unconnected with the whites, their manners are mild and amiable. Now, you can think what I'm thinking as a scientist when I read that. Okay, yeah. So everything's good when I can't see it. Great. Okay.
Totally, you know, scientific.
Is there a sound when a tree falls in a forest and there's
exactly.
No one there? Okay. On the contrary, he says, an acquaintance with Europeans alters and corrupts their natural character, which, amazingly, he actually puts in the word amazingly. Yeah, sure as hell it's amazing. Which amazingly degenerates. And this remark, which is a melancholy truth, seldom admits of an exception. I cannot begin to tell you the scientific stupidity in that paragraph.
Wow.
Actually, the use of the word science in that...
it's come full circle, because that's just about what's going on today.
And that's why
doing.
I wanted to read it to you, because I was part of what I want to convey to you guys is, we had a president in South Africa during the Second World War, the one where the concentration camps were invented.
Hold that thought, Harry, so we don't have to cut it in half. Let's take a really quick break, and then we'll have a straight shot at that. We're going to be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillons. We are discussing South Africa, and you are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front fire, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. It's time for Africa.
Okay, I like the little soccer song. I just think it's fun. Okay, that's our only fun song today. Back to the left.
So we were talking about the insanity of it all.
Where the insanity arises.
Exactly. So go ahead and pick it up where you left off.
Right. So I've quoted you guys that little bit that the Frenchman Lavallois wrote about the African bush in 1780. Well, he wrote it in 1790, but he was traveling through the bush in 1782. Things took some time to do back then. So I wrote in my book, if you allow me to quote just one short paragraph, I said, it is striking that this representative of Jean-Jacques Rousseau's noble savage school of thought would write this drivel even as the black Amakosa were killing one another in droves a few miles away from where he was. The present half-blind, psychotic, guilt-based behavior on the part of Western man therefore comes a long way and appears to have been born in the minds of the 18th century French philosophers. It remains intriguing how much the 18th century philosophers could expound on the nobility of savages without ever meeting one.
Yeah, because that would have just messed up the whole program.
Yeah. Now, he was not the philosopher. He just bought their story. The philosophers sat in France. Okay, the closest they ever got to a savage was one of them who went to Tahiti. Not exactly the African bush.
No, not exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so, like we were at Epcot, now, but that doesn't mean we really went to Morocco.
So now, in my efforts to make history interesting, so, you know, there you hear what the French were thinking back then, and I gave you a real Frenchman on a horse in the bush in Africa, in his own words, and I'll give you the reference where you can read it, what he wrote. It's not my words, it's his. Now, by 1783, a year later, 80% of Britain's economy was still based on the slave trade. 80% of Britain's economy was based on the slave trade. Britain was the main slave trading nation. Don't let them give you any other BS, okay? They had completely taken that over from the Portuguese, long time before. So, given that they had championed the cause of slavery, and given that they had now lost America, okay, they now convinced themselves that Africa was where they had to go and atone to be absolved. Their Prime Minister, William Pitt, joined their national lament on 2 April 1792 in their parliament. Now, the following quote is in one of these great British books of greatest ever speeches, you know, in the history of man. Well, I grew up in Africa. I read it for what it really is. So here's what he said. Remember, this is 1792, which is just 9 years after their slavery peaked at 80% of their economy. He wrote, or he spoke in Parliament and said, quote, how shall we hope to obtain? Let me stop. How do I put on a voice like that lady Ford who accused Kavanaugh? I need to figure out how to put on that voice.
Yeah.
None of us can actually tell me how to put on that voice.
I need that now. How shall we hope to obtain, if it be possible, forgiveness from heaven, capital letter, for the enormous evils we have committed, if we refuse to make use of those means which the mercy of Providence has still reserved for us for wiping away the shame and guilt with which we are now covered. Okay. Fair, leave it in that book, inscribe it on a statue, call him William Pitt and shove it on a plinth, you know, and don't take his statue down. Great. Well, I have a couple of suggestions for what they could have done. They could have sailed back to America, offered you many millions and bought the slaves back from you and then freed them, maybe. They could have gone and put them back, or the children back where they found them in the first place. But no, that was going to cost money, you see. So what they really want to do is make, like, certain American political parties stand in what was then the British Parliament, thump their chests, bring out sacks of ash, rend their hair, and lament before man and God about how terrible they have been. And then, to make up for all of that, they are going to go not to where they got slaves in Africa. They were not going to go where the slave trading happened. They are going to take their little rear ends to the one place in Africa where no slaves were ever taken. Cape Town, South Africa. They send the London Missionary Society. And that's when all our troubles started. So I want to now just play you a little mental piece here that comes from back across on the continent of Europe in 1791, a year before that speech by Pitt. There was a water spout, of all things, on the River Meuse. Now, I don't think there are too many water spouts usually in Europe because the weather doesn't get that rotational. But it takes places like the U.S. to develop water spouts and tornadoes and so forth. But there was a water spout on the River Meuse. And it so happened that it ran over a little rowing boat on that river. And in that rowing boat was a man called Johannes Theodorus van der Kemp with his wife and his daughter. And the boat was overturned. And Johannes Theodorus van der Kemp saw his wife and daughter die in that accident. He made it out. His life went to pieces. He went back to his Dutch Reformed religion. And then he found out a couple of years later about the creation of that London Missionary Society. And this broken man then joined the London Missionary Society to become the man who was inflicted on South Africa in the year 1800 as the first representative of the London Missionary Society. Now, I promised I would make history interesting because ultimately sending him there led to the finding of the source of the River Nile because, you see, Livingston was a later member of that operation. Okay? And had just as weird a history, but one is not allowed to say that because he's an untouchable hero, so you shouldn't let facts intrude. You know, facts are a terrible thing. The problem with scientists like me is this is probably why Leonardo da Vinci was you know, run out of town in Italy because he dared to speak the truth. Anyway, Van der Kemp, now there was a character for you, okay? This guy arrives over there with a commission to go and preach to the black people under King Gaika on this extremely volatile frontier, that colony between white and black. He, in the middle of a war, wants the help of people to get to the black King Gaika. So he joins a wagon train of Afrikaner ancestors of my wife. They are fleeing the frontier, going into some of the uncharted territory, not totally uncharted by, but really away from the black people, further into the interior. They flee. And they're doing so in a wagon train with all their guns and their powder and all of that. So they say to Van der Kemp, sure, you can join us. And then when the Imidange Xhosa, the bad ones, so to speak, attack, Van der Kemp sits on the wagon, gives his gun, old blunderbuss, gives it to some of his coy helpers. They have to do the shooting, and he sits there and says, I have no fight with those people. Wow. Interesting character. So his rear end has to be protected by everybody else around him while he professes a higher level of understanding of humanity and loyalty. You cannot tell me that you haven't seen some of those creatures in your political woodwork in the last few years.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, whichever way the wind blows.
So, well, I found him particularly useful because my people were not exactly, you know, riddled with guys writing diaries at the time, and he kept a diary. So I found a lot of the evidence for what I'm saying in his own diary, which is kind of fascinating. Now, I can go into a whole story there, but that's going to take away all our time. So all I'm going to say is that he ended up failing with the black people. So he returned to the Cape and decided, tell you what, I'm going to stay here at the Cape, but I'm now going to minister to the Khoi people instead of the black people. And soon enough, as soon as he got in there, he explained to them that they were oppressed. They were often, they were really badly off. You should watch out for these Republicans. Oh, sorry. okay. Right?
You accidentally did fast forward into reality.
Yeah, sorry. It's just, you need to understand what goes through my head when I watch U.S. television.
Oh, I bet.
I get the whole history of South Africa runs like a continuous reel through my head, and I just want to rip my hair out of my head saying, wake up, boys, wake up, boys. Do I have to come down there and tell you reality? Anyway, so he eventually came back, ministered to the Khoi people for whom he created mission stations, and eventually the people from those mission stations were called in to build the scaffold to hang my family. Okay? Huh. Interesting. Mission station people used to build the scaffold. How do you like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but that's a whole other story for another day. And again, I don't want to sidetrack myself too badly. Let the history lapse for a while there, and just you can understand with that little bit I put in there that my folks were not thrilled with the London Missionary Society or their particular missionary. There were several others. The Wesleyans were okay. Even the Catholic Church came later, but the Anglicans came. They had trouble with the Anglicans, but not much. They had no problem with the Wesleyans, etc., etc. I'm going to hold it there just for a minute, and then let's get a break in.
Because through the magic of the Skype text box, we just communicated.
There you go.
In the last half hour of the show, we've gotten it all together.
We finally figured it out.
I didn't want people to think we were just all of a sudden just, super good at this. So you're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And remember, this show's about education. The entertainment's just a little thing we throw in for fun.
As I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone.
It's kissing the day.
Tomorrow. There we go.
We mentioned earlier we were on vacation the last couple of weeks, and a couple of the programs.
For the first time in 12 years, let's point that out.
Yeah, let's point that out.
We finally
broke down and got away from it all. But one program in particular we attended was about American history, and from our conception until current day. And it's interesting how our history turned out because we defeated the British, and the similarity or what it could have been had we not won that war and ended up under British rule. I think we'd be looking at the same thing you're looking at right now, Harry.
Well, that's a cue for me, Bill, to just quickly grab a piece of paper I wanted to use in a previous show and just ask you these quick questions.
Nice job, Bill.
What would Americans have done if, number one, the British governor of the United States, sorry, of America, had written a letter to London stating that he wanted to create a Mohawk army to intimidate the citizenry? That's with apologies to the Mohawks. I have nothing against them.
Mm-hmm. You can pick somebody.
Okay? I just picked someone. What if he had disarmed the farmers on the frontier and half the colonial territory was lost to a consequent massed Indian attack of combined tribes on the 13 colonies or combined nations?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What if British missionaries in America told London that the farmers were murdering indigenous Indians and the King instituted a circuit court to hear these cases? No one was found guilty because the missionaries had willfully lied. And that is what the magistrates found, by the way.
Yeah.
What if, in the wake of those hearings, your ancestral brother was accused of mistreating an Indian, refused to turn up at court, given the history of the previous point, was shot dead in response by Indians in British Army uniform under British command, the above army having been indeed formed by the governor?
Yep.
What if his brother swore revenge, was caught and hanged with four more men, and the citizens of the district were forced by the governor's Mohawk army to watch? What if four of the ropes broke, but the magistrate simply redid the hanging in front of the distressed relatives? What if that rebellion had been planned on your family's farm? What if the massed armies of Indians invaded the colony and killed your family, and the governor realized it was now war and he had to fight the Indians, and the government in London announced that you were the problem, fired the governor, and gave back the Indians the land the governor's army had just taken, thereby placing the invaders on your doorstep again, always considering the invaders had bypassed the British army post to attack the civilians? What if, in response, you started the great trek into the unknown west of America simply to get away from British authority, packed up your family and your belongings and your family Bible, sometimes even your family piano, on an ox wagon and trundled off into the unknown west at 20 miles a day because anything was better than any more imperial British rule? What if 40 of you were attacked by 5,000 battle-crazed warriors who had never lost a battle and you had to fight from your wagon circle? What if you survived that against all odds and then attacked the offenders, driving them north some 400 miles? Okay? And then found, I kid you not, an American missionary serving among them, and he chooses to rather come home with you and baptizes your family. And he creates, wait for it, the Dutch Reformed Church in the new territory. That is my family history.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
That's this kind of thing that caused me to write the book, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What if 100 of your party made proper contract with a savage king for land, had a British missionary draw up the contract, secured the king's cross, the signature, in front of witnesses, okay? And your guys delivered the side of the bargain, and they were then killed and impaled by that king. 100 of them.
Yep.
What if that savage king sent his army to massacre the women and children who had stayed behind, cutting the babies from the mothers' bodies? 400 of the folks died.
Oh.
Okay? So that is the history of South Africa. Now, on another day, I can go into all of that. I'm going to just simply bypass that and go straight to the media. Because what preceded this great trek into the east to get away, into your west, if you wish, in parallel, our northeast, what precipitated it was a war in 1835, and by that stage, this London Missionary Society had created a pressure group in London. The boss of this mission, his daughter married the owner of the biggest newspaper in Cape Town, and that newspaper launched into all the white people on the frontier. So this is like the New York Times on the coast, okay? Only it was called the Commercial Advertiser. Launching into these folks who are fighting for their lives on the Tennessee border. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, not Tennessee. I meant the Great Fish River in South Africa. Okay? And there is nothing the guys on that border can do. Here is what a notary public in frustration wrote in his own book about what was going on. He says, biased in favor of the black people, deeply prejudiced against the colonists, every evidence on behalf of the latter, however respectable or trustworthy, was unheeded, while the wildest and most extravagant denunciations against them were favorably entertained. And even its very report was entrusted to be drawn up by the Reverend Dr. Philip, now the leader of that mission, the least principled and bitterest accuser of the colonists, a person to serve his purpose did not hesitate in one case to suppress and in another interpolate whole passages in public papers. The committee, besides being guilty of the most shameless fabrications. You know, over this weekend, I was thinking of this quote, and I was sitting on my bed yelling, "We are all Kavanaugh now."
Yeah.
So I wrote here, the fervor with which Philip and his London supporters went about destroying the character of the governor, the military leader, the settlers, the Afrikaners, absolutely knew no bound. Okay? Eventually, he confessed his true prejudice against his own blood in a letter to the American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions. Here is the boss of the London Missionary Society in South Africa in the 1830s, 40s, saying about his own people, "I consider the black people on the border of this colony as most decidedly superior to that portion of the refuse of English society that find their way to this country."
Wow.
They were smelly Walmart people, were they not?
Yeah, not mixing any words there.
Okay, so like I said, I come from a long line of smelly Walmart people. I proudly shop at Walmart. My only objection is I wish they would stop selling me Chinese rubbish.
Yeah, there is that.
But that's all. Other than that, the people I meet there are perfectly fine. No problem. Okay. So I wanted to share with you that bit out of the 1830s. History marches on, gets fascinating, and it can all be summarized in one or two sentences which boil down to, wherever my guys went, the British would follow soon with cannon and navy. And they would always, always, always use the words of those missionaries, even when that missionary organization was fundamentally destroyed. They would still use its line of thinking. Sorry. They would still continue to say that my folks were slavers, did all kinds of terrible stuff, presumably looking for us behind the door where they themselves were standing. I mean, it was the British who had perfected the slave trade, doing their triangular trade, slave route. Taking slaves in Africa, selling them in America, taking American goods, selling it in Britain, and taking Britain manufactured goods and selling it in Africa. They had that triangular thing with a rule that said, don't bring the merchandise home. That is why the slaves were not taken to Britain. The merchandise was not supposed to come home. Okay? That phrase was even used by my own mother when she explained why she couldn't bring certain books home because the company policy was, quote, don't bring the merchandise home. So that history rolls forward with my little lot being chased all over southern Africa. As soon as they had won a major battle against some party, the Brits would come and take it all. And the excuse would always, always, always be that my folks are slavers. So always, always, the British government looked for us behind the door where they themselves were standing.
Right.
And they used that, for example, to take the western part of what is now the Orange Free State province, because apparently our guys wanted to do slavery only where the diamonds were.
Yeah.
Oh,
what a
okay.
coincidence.
Yeah.
As soon as there were, oil was not yet the big deal. Diamonds were a big deal. So, as soon as the diamonds were found, our guys were practicing slavery there, and Britain had to go and save the poor people. The fact that the Brits then moved them out and shipped them elsewhere in the African bush is not remembered. That way, they then had the diamonds, you see? And the same happened with the gold and so forth. So, that pattern repeats over and over. And that is why, if you speak to an Afrikaner like me, and someone tells me that they're concerned about the human rights of ABC over there, I question everything.
Bill's having a little spaz attack with his phone over here.
Okay. Now, I want
Pardon that musical interlude.
I want to jump through a whole bunch of history that follows. I'm going to go right past the Great Boer War and all of that kind of stuff and take you deep into the 20th century.
All right. Let's take
into more contemporary history.
We'll take our final break, and then we'll come back and do that. Meanwhile, we'll turn Bill's phone off. Oh, you're listening to We the People. We're here with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillons. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. So in our final, like, 12 minutes or whatever, what would you like to leave people with?
Well,
no pressure or anything.
I would like to just quickly cover that late 1800s or middle late 1800s piece of history, because it's so important to the who stole the land issue. And I'd like to point out, when all these folks set off north in their ox wagons to get away from the British, they ended up making a proper deal with a captain, a chief called Makawana of the Batong tribe in what is now the Orange Free State province. And he sold a huge tract of land to them based on that deal. And the deal consisted of, please give me so many head of cattle and protect me against Mtsilikazi of the Matabele tribe. And so my ancestors went off, and when the a little bit further north, and when the Matabele attacked our guys, it was that fight that I described earlier in that thought experiment about an alternative United States. Having driven off the Matabele but lost all their cattle, they got help from another black chief who stayed friends for all of his life. And then they set off to go and attack Mtsilikazi, and they drove the Matabele, Mtsilikazi and his Matabele, out of South Africa all the way into Zimbabwe, where they became the Ndebele tribe of Zimbabwe, the people who were murdered out so badly by Mugabe, 40,000 of them killed by Mugabe. Okay? They were no longer in South Africa. Our guys argued that, well, the area vacated by them is now rightfully ours. And it is in that area where much of the dispute of South Africa is happening, because the people who were originally driven out by Mtsilikazi came back in and said, hey, excuse us, but this is originally our home. We want it back now. Thank you. Thank you for defeating him, and please go away. Okay? So the South African history and how things went with the black tribes is rather different from the Indian one. It's not as though you had an endless series of wars. You had sequences of treaties and then consolidation of things, and sometimes things done in bad faith and so forth, and you had a trail of tears and all that kind of stuff. We don't have that history. We have a history of straight up and down fights, and a history of actual deals made. The land in the province of Natal on the coast was formally bought from that king, who then killed our guys. The land between the two major rivers was formally bought. The eastern half came with a fight with the Sotho people, but they're not the main instigators of the farming trouble at the moment, and they have their own country anyway. And then to the far north in South Africa is the one area where I would say black people have a legitimate argument about some of that land was always theirs and should be respected. And I would back them up on that. But to say that the central government is simply going to go and take property away from white people because they are white, come on, you know, where does that come from?
So, it comes from the communist playbook.
Yeah. So the problem for us now is that while that was the history of South Africa, this school of thought that I call the beast, this London Missionary Society beast, that started dominating the press, not only in London, well, in South Africa, but certainly in London. And from there, it was exported to the United States. And that is how it came about, that the New York Times, during the time of the concentration camps in South Africa, reported, as I already said on another show, reported that the ladies in the concentration camps can play tennis all day. And if you don't watch that, I'll send you the link to the New York Times article where they say that.
Wow.
Okay? So there's an entire school of thought. I call it the body of the beast. And you're up against that thing. And you saw it in operation over the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Absolutely saw it in operation. That beast took us down in South Africa. Okay? There's no way we could keep standing with the U.S. implementing weapon sanctions against us and then complete universal sanctions, etc. We had no hope in hell. However, when you start getting freedom of information releases of documents, you read stuff like this. Here is Henry Kissinger in the mid-1970s when he asked us to go into Angola to help the United States. Quote, there is an African sentiment, admittedly only in private, but probably more extensive than we know, which accepts the necessity of South Africa's balancing intervention if a Soviet victory is to be prevented and the military balance necessary to achieve political compromise is to be maintained. That's fancy diplomatic speak. How about I quote you the notes made by Bob Ingersoll, who was then the Deputy Secretary of State, 19 December 1975. Okay, freedom of information results. The key to keeping our side in Angola from collapsing is South Africa. As far as the Africans are concerned, they would agree to have South Africa clean up Angola. But we could not pay the domestic price in this country. And there it is. There's the beast. Africa was okay. Africa came and asked our help to go in there against the Russians and the Cubans. The problem was not the Russians. The problem was not the Cubans. The problem was not the Angolans we were struggling against. It was not the Angolans we were supporting. It was not the black nations who came and asked us for help. The problem was the left wing in America. I read again. But we couldn't pay the domestic price in this country. In my book, I say Ingersoll was proven correct. The problem lay not in Africa. It lay distinctly in the United States. The beast breeds in your media, guys.
Ugh.
Okay?
We're sorry.
When your Deputy Secretary of State writes the truth in the margin of a formal Security Council meeting, which is what this was, okay? When your state president at the time, 10 years later, right, this is Reagan, 1985. South Africa is not a totalitarian society. There's a vigorous opposition press, outspoken protest, and access to international media that would never be possible in any part of Africa or in the Soviet Union, for that matter. That's a press meeting in the Oval Office, 10:30 a.m., September the 9th, 1985. But that was no good. Your Congress decided to overturn his veto of sanctions against South Africa. And when that happened, it was the same thing as your bank tearing, you know, calling up your mortgage, ripping up your mortgage line of credit, and snipping up all your credit cards. That's us.
Mm-hmm.
We lost the farm. Thanks to your Congress of that period. Both in 75, when they implemented the Clark Amendment and caused us to be deserted in the face of the enemy, and secondly, in 1985-86, when they passed comprehensive sanctions against South Africa, that is when the ANC tasted blood in the water and they went for the jugular. And of course, when Bill Clinton came in, he backed them. It was all over. We're dead. I am dead man walking. I represent the last of the Mohicans. This is how you die, guys. Not with a bang, but with a bloody whimper. Okay? And you can thank your media. Okay? May God help you that they don't take your country down because they are busy succeeding.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, they would like to, and I think they've got plans for that. And
they'll never stop. They'll never stop. Doesn't matter how many times we punch back, they'll never stop.
You know, the one thing you can count on with them, though, is they always go too far. They go too far too fast. And then it's enough for people to go, wait a minute. That doesn't actually make sense.
So I trust you've heard me clearly that I acknowledge that in some parts of South Africa, black people have a very solid case for claiming that there be something done about land. But to make it a blanket statement about all of South Africa is just plain evil and racist.
And then to go in and kill people to try to drive them off their land and intimidate them.
I don't even know how to begin, saying how wrong that is.
Yeah, there's no excuse for that. I don't care what happens.
You know, and then I, having written stuff like this, I have to sit down in front of my TV and I see the same monster that destroyed us go after people like President Trump and Judge Kavanaugh.
Trump's really the first guy in a lot of years who has, you know, done anything that was helpful, it sounds like, for South Africa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, while I liked Reagan, you know that Reagan was eventually buried by a South African, right? His church minister was a South African.
Did not know that.
Okay, go check it out. He was a South African church minister for Reagan. I heard the accent and I thought, what am I hearing?
You're like, I must know that guy.
And so I did the homework, and yes, he was South African. He died more recently.
Interesting.
But so far, President Trump is the one who has more specifically done something. Nothing Reagan did really helped much in the end, but what President Trump did help. You finally have a president who is not, forgive the phrase...
Your spaceship is ready.
At least, you know, your president is not gesticulatorily challenged like your Republican Party.
So, although they've stepped up, which is kind of nice.
You know, we have an expression in Afrikaans that says "ja broer," which means "yes, brother." The kind of guys who sit in a chorus and when somebody speaks at a political rally, they go "yes, yes, 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 brother, yes, yes, yes." They're called "yes brothers."
Yeah, well, we've got some of those. Hey, we've got to run away again, but I'm sure we'll chat soon. And so
thank you.
Thanks a million.
Thanks for coming
for
on,
all the
Harry.
Great information.
We'll get together again shortly, I'm sure.
Keep us.
Because this is an ongoing
posted.
Story.
And three cheers for South Africa. You guys hang in there. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Until next week.